Okay, I'll be quick. good morning. I have no disclosures to tell you about, so I'll get started. So I think you all know that consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages has been linked to obesity, weight gain, diabetes, cardiovascular risk, and as is found with other food products, the price of sugar-sweetened beverages is inversely associated with consumption. So taxing sugar-sweetened beverages has been proposed as one way to increase price and reduce consumption. Only one jurisdiction in the U.S., as you know, Berkeley, has been successful in passing a sugar-sweetened beverage tax above and beyond a general sales tax. Proposals in many other jurisdictions have failed. So my group, and I'm sure many others of you in the room and the advocates that we've heard from, are really interested in how can we get policy change. We have these promising policies, including the tax, but we can't really evaluate them, or we can only evaluate them in a limited way until we see implementation. In addition, popular demand for obesity prevention policy action has sort of been slow to mobilize. So we approach this problem using a theory of change that relied heavily on the theory of perceived responsibility and social motivation, which proposes that what we think about what causes a social problem influences what we think will solve the social problem. And we wanted to know, in particular, can public attitudes about the causes of and solutions to obesity help us understand what underlies support for sugar-sweetened beverage taxes? We think that gauging public opinion about sugar-sweetened beverage taxes and assessing what might predict support for those taxes can inform strategies to mobilize demand for such a policy. It's also important, we think, to conduct context-specific studies in geographic areas in this country where obesity levels are highest, such as the Midwest and southern states. We work in Kansas, so our study took place in Kansas. We used data from a representative household survey of Kansas residents that we conducted in summer 2014. It was a dual-frame telephone sample, so cell phones and landlines were sampled to yield about 2,200 completed interviews, and these were adults in Kansas. the survey took approximately 15 minutes to complete, and our main dependent variable was support for a sugar-sweetened beverage tax, and we measured that on a scale from 1 to 5, so from strongly in favor to strongly against. And then we also measured a slew of independent variables of interest, including demographics such as age, gender, race, income, parental status. We also asked about history of overweight and obesity, political affiliation, and then finally our main variables of interest, which were two scales. So one measured the causes or perceived causes of obesity, and the other measured perceived solutions to the obesity problem in Kansas. And just a few examples of those items. So for the causes scale, some of the items are healthy foods are expensive, there are not enough safe places to exercise outdoors, and so on. For the solution scale, we had respondents rate several groups on how much they perceived those groups to be responsible for solving the obesity problem, and they rated these groups on a scale from most, some, or little of their responsibility. And some of those groups include the food industry, employers, schools, and state and local government. Now, let me tell you what we did. So we calculated just distribution of support for the tax overall and by political affiliation. And then we estimated a series of regression models, and I'll walk you through those. So what did we find? We found overall about 40% of Kansans were in favor of the tax. Support varied significantly by political affiliation, which we kind of assumed would be the case. So the highest level of support was among liberals at about 50%. And it's interesting to compare both of these numbers to a 2010 survey done by a different group that found that only 9.5% of Kansas legislators support a sugar-sweetened beverage tax. And we also conducted a survey last summer with opinion leaders in Kansas, including legislators and other groups such as the media, business people, and county and state level elected officials, and we also found much lower support among those groups than among Kansans. To compare this to other sort of recent polls across the country, recent polls on support for this type of tax really varies by item wording and also geographic location, but I can tell you that this is close to a recent survey of a mid-Atlantic state in which about 50% of respondents supported the tax, so pretty close over in Kansas. Okay, this is really busy, so I'm going to walk you through it. So this table is basically showing the relationship between our independent variables of interest, so sociodemographics, and our belief scales and support for the tax. So first of all, we found that gender and age consistently predict support for the sugar sweetened beverage tax, such that females and young people are more supportive than males and those aged 65 and older. When we added political affiliation to the model, low income became significantly associated with higher support for the tax as well. Identifying as liberal was also strongly related to support compared to identifying as conservative. And just to note that neither history of obesity or overweight nor parental status affected support for the tax. So the crux of our findings here in the third model, while age and gender remained significant, the magnitude of their effect and their significance decreased. Identifying as liberal also became non-significant when we added in our belief items. So the two belief attribution scales were significantly associated with sugar sweetened beverage tax support, such that the more a respondent attributed the causes of and solutions to obesity to structural and environmental factors, the more likely they were to support the policy. The magnitude of the effect for the responsibility scale was a little bit stronger than that of the causal scales. And finally, the R-squared, which is basically a representation of the explanatory value of a variable in your model, it more than doubled when we added the belief scales to the model. So this reveals that beliefs and attitudes explain a meaningful portion of the variation in support for the tax, above and beyond that of demographics and political affiliation. Just quickly, when we put individual items into the model rather than this scale of all of our items together, a few individual items did come out as significant. I just wanted to mention those. From the causal scale, the items unhealthy food is inexpensive and easy to find. There are too many unhealthy foods, snacks, and drinks available in schools, and people spend too much time in front of TV, video games, and computers were all related significantly to support. From the responsibility scale, endorsing that state and local governments and employers bear responsibility for solving the problem in Kansas were both associated with support for the tax. So what does this all mean? Basically, our main finding is that belief that factors external to the individual are responsible for or have some responsibility for the cause and solution to the obesity problem was the most significant predictor of support for a sugar sweetened beverage tax, controlling for a slew of other things that we know are related to support. So basically, more work needs to be done by the public health community to increase the public's understanding of obesity as an environmental and system-based challenge. Messaging about the environmental, structural, and societal causes of obesity need to be communicated more effectively in order to mobilize the public. This study provides evidence that beliefs about the causes of obesity and the solutions to it are more strongly associated with support for a tax than political ideology, which gives us a little bit of hope, right? Because it's easy, especially in a challenging political environment, to think that you can't really get past partisan thinking. So we believe that these findings and findings similar to this can really support targeting of messages to increase support among the public and among policymakers. And I'm going to skip my last slide. Basically, this is an example of a message that is sort of a non-threatening way to explain how governments can be an ally in improving health. And I think the next step in this line of research is really to test experimentally whether instilling these beliefs can increase policy support among the public. And that's it. I'm happy to answer questions after. Thank you. Oh, thank you for funding.
I would like to thank all the speakers on the panel today. And we have just a couple minutes for questions. So could you be brief? And the responders, could you also be brief? Thank you. We'll take your question.
Hi. Overall, you showed that the low income people were more likely to support the gap. And I'm wondering if that's similar to what we saw in Canada, my friend did a campaign where they interviewed another clean indoor air media campaign, and the non-smokers were more protective of the smokers. The non-smokers thought, oh, this is too aggressive, and the smokers thought the ad campaign wasn't aggressive enough. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if you think that the high-income people, you know, we're going to, you know, protect.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say, when we had a session this afternoon, in this same survey, we asked about a bunch of different food prevention policies, and we found that for many of them, support was higher among low-income people. So,
I think it goes to San Francisco, and you look at the public leadership of the San Francisco campaign, and they built leadership they built voices into the leadership of that campaign that represented low-income populations. And so they were able to neutralize that argument to a certain extent by having those public voices, the public leadership of the campaign, be from those communities. I think that's really, Berkeley, I think, did the same thing. And so I think that's one of the ways.
Any other questions? Yeah. All right, I think we're at 10 o'clock.
One
yes?
If I feel, just a comment, I'm coming from the Westwood experience of passing measures through garbage stops in Mexico. There was recently an initiative to reduce the tax to 5% of our graduate tax. And what was fascinating is that there was a possibility to go across ideological lines and getting support from legislators in Mexico when you were talking about children and children protection. And that just resonated with me now as you were talking about, you know, how the care population is.
Okay. Thank you very much, everyone. Do enjoy the rest of the conference.